You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our show is so good that we do our season premiere twice. Premiere. I've been out of it for so long that I can't even talk properly. And actually, we may do our season premiere thrice from your perspective, depending on how you categorize things, because for the first 2 weeks of February, William will not be on the show. This week, I decided to do a solo episode because I had to have a lot to talk about. Next week, William is busy, and Don Watkins will be joining me as co-host. I invited him on as a guest, but I'm going to spring on him that he's going to be the co-host for the week. Really, it'll just be us having a conversation. There's a few things I'd love to talk to Don about things that have happened over the past few months or so. The past year or so, really, since Don has been on the show. It's been a while. We need to have Don on more often. So that's a pledge I'm going to make for season 9 here. We're going to have Don Watkins on more often. Then after that, in the third week of February, William will return. And then perhaps that is the official season premiere. So I did a one-off solo episode in January. I'm doing a solo episode now. Then Don will be on next week. Then William will be back. Which one's the season premiere? You pick. Choose your own adventure. We socially construct reality here in the midside. No, we don't. Anyway, who am I? For the new listeners out there, I'm Justin M. Wozdeski. I'm the host, the creator here in the midside. And it's crazy to me that we're entering the 9th season. 9 years of this. 9 years of this. I've been in Florida for a year now, which means that I started this about 2 years into my journey in California. And that's how this really started. People have heard me say it before on the show that the reason this show was started is sort of a coping mechanism for living in California, where everything is beyond crazy with the way things are, even now, right? I don't know why anyone is staying in California. I then last year, about this time, on Wednesday the 3rd, I hit my 1 year anniversary teaching at a local high school here. I moved about the week before that. I moved across country, so I've been in Florida for about a year now, and I'm loving it. I'm loving being here, and that's something we'll get into later in the show. There's a couple other things I want to talk about. First, if you are in our Discord channel, you would know what those things are for two reasons. One, I solicited input from the listeners. I said, hey, what do you all want to hear me talk about? And then I also, the second reason is I put the outline in there. I put the outline in there for my own use, for my own memory. I've rearranged things a little bit based upon experiences I've just had today. There's a couple of quick little cool stories that happened today that related to one of the topics, so I'm going to end with that topic. But if you were in our Discord, you could be chatting with us during the week, during the off season. I feel like it kept things going. The Discord kept things going in the off season. So if you just want to do that, you know, hook up with us, have some conversation, go to themidside.com and themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode link, and you can join the Discord there. There's a join Discord link. You just join that. You have conversation with us. It's awesome. There's even William, and I know William will appreciate this, even though I canceled my Amazon Prime, so I can't get to it yet. But William started an Expanse channel. There's a text channel specifically for Expanse spoilers. So if you need someone to talk to about the Expanse in an intelligent way, William's in there. Trailer Takedown Dan's in there. I don't know who else is in there because I won't click it, although I do find it really annoying that I don't know if anyone else has this problem with notifications. There are new unreads every time I go into Discord, and I'm like, ooh, somebody responded in the general channel. But no, it's all the Expanse spoilers channel. And I don't know how many messages are in there. I don't know how often they're talking because I don't want to be spoiled. But I know that I have notifications every time I sign into Discord. So maybe it's a hopping channel. Maybe it's just the same one spoiler has been in there forever. Who knows? Maybe when I eventually watch the show, I'll figure it out too. To be fair, I'll probably forget about that. Something we all can't forget about, and I know you guys are probably dying for an out, an out, out. input from me. I don't know why I said output. Maybe it's because I just heard my cat outside the door here. I'm in the, I'm once again inside the closet, but it's in my new apartment. I moved downstairs to a two-bedroom because Christine finally moved from California to Florida, so we need more space. And I'm trying to get the cat used to not being in the room when I'm recording, in the closet when I'm recording, and I think she's out there moaning, so that's why my brain set out. But anyway, I'm sure you guys are all waiting for my input on, and I say that sarcastically, COVID. COVID's still going. The pandemic's still going, right? I have not become a virus denier, but what I have become is a virus minimizer. And I don't even like that term. I don't like that term, even though I just made it up right now. I don't like that term because I feel like everyone else is the virus maximizer. If you look at the death rates, if you look at the survival rates, if you look at what actually happens when people get it, we've been over all this on the show, right? It's just, it's beyond apparent at this point that everything is being done just to control us. You know, I said about a year ago on this show about the death rates. The death rates around the world have, I think they've passed, but not by much of the high-end estimate of what they said would happen in the U.S. alone. And the U.S. alone is at, what, 400,000? So we're not even close to what I said, like, when I was like, a million, because I wasn't sure what would be acceptable or not, right? And there's all sorts of bullshit about that. But what really hits home with me is two things. One, the whole mask thing. I'm over the whole mask thing. Like, I don't know what anyone else is like here, but maybe you can tune in and chime in the chat in Discord and let me know. I forget my mask. I legitimately forget. It's not on the front of my mind. I forget. I'll be going places and I'll just not have my mask and I'll have to go back and get it. It's just, it's not a high priority for me. I don't care. The other day, I had to, this is great, right? So I had to leave the campus, high school campus, on my lunch period to go to the post office to get certified mail. Because I got a letter that was certified. So you can only pick that up at the post office. So I went, and I picked it up. You know, I thought this was going to be something else. Like, I've been having trouble getting a card because my address changed and everything. I thought they were just holding it. I was going to have to pick it up. I go, it's from my apartment complex. Because I owe them $285 of leftover from my old apartment. It cost them $411 to send it. Think about that for a second. Think about that. I owed them $285. It cost them $411 to send it. So I go, I pick that up. Then I go get lunch, right? And I'm in my car. I'm not wearing my mask. And then I come back into the school, and I get ready for class, and then I start teaching, and all the kids are looking at me. Very funny. They're looking at me in a very funny way. Like, what's going on right now? And I was trying to figure it out. And I stopped, and I thought for a second. I go, I don't have my mask on, do I? And they're like, no, we were wondering what's going on. I was like, you guys have heard me before. You know what the deal is. So that's the first thing, is masks. I think, you know, we see with the whole vaccine thing, and that's probably the major update since this show's been on hiatus, since you guys have heard from me. The whole vaccine thing, we see that there's people are saying now that it doesn't matter if there are vaccines or not. People still need to wear masks. They still need to socially distance. All right. It's clear this is all about control. I said pretty early on, they're going to try and make us wear masks for the rest of our lives. I still believe that. It's going to be up to us, in the same sense that if all the businesses just opened at the same time, the government couldn't stop them without getting violent. It's up to us in that if we all stop wearing masks, that's the only way it's going to be culturally acceptable to not wear masks anymore. That's something we all need to be careful about. And this is clearly all about control, and it's all bullshit. And the ultimate thing that's really bad about it is it's anti-reality. Because the other thing that hits close to home is related to the whole deaths, causes of deaths, diagnosis, right, tests and all of that. At the time of this recording, my grandmother died last night. Now, I don't say that to get sympathy from anyone. I don't say that because I'm particularly upset. That's a whole different story, right? The whole relationship with my family, relationship with my grandmother. I don't know if this makes me a bad person or not to say this. I don't think it does. I may lose audience members. Who knows? I didn't particularly love my grandmother. I didn't particularly think my grandmother was a very good person. I didn't hate her. I just didn't have much love for her because of the way she would act and the things she would say and the things she would do. It just, she was fine, right? Didn't, you know, ironically, the last card she ever sent me, and this was years ago, the last card she ever sent me for the holidays, I never got. It got lost in the mail. So I suppose there's a certain appropriateness there. Anyway, she died last night in hospice. All right. 91 years old. Okay, that's a good run. Born in 1929. Actually, born on Valentine's Day in 1929. And crazy enough, her husband was born Valentine's Day in 1929. And my other grandmother was born not that same year, but also on Valentine's Day. So three of my four grandparents were born on Valentine's Day. That's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. So she was pretty close to being 92 years old here. Right? Pretty close to being 92 years old. So that's a good run. Okay? 92 is a good run. That's really good longevity. And, you know, over the last few years, she's been declining as it happens. And what basically happened was, never diagnosed, but obvious dementia. You know, she wasn't remembering things, remembering people. And then she got cancer. It was in her foot. Was taken out. Then it came back. So this is what happens, right? I talked to my students about this one day. Like, it's sort of the house principle, right? It's you live with dignity, you can't die with it. And what I mean by that is everyone declines. It's that that's why the human body dies. That's why people die, right? There's no such thing as a perpetual motion device because everything decays. Everything is worn down. I lost what I was going to say, where the point I was going with that. But, everything decays, everything works out. So that's what happened to her, right? She just naturally, that's what happened. But she moved from, like, assisted living to eventually hospice. And then when she moved to this hospice place, they put her in quarantine for a couple of weeks because, you know, they don't want anyone bringing anything in. But that, you know, only made her dementia increase more rapidly. Because if your mind is going, you need mental stimulation to keep it going, right? I mean, as it is, you need mental stimulation to keep your mind strong. You need physical stimulation to keep your body strong, your muscles strong, right? That's the way it works. If you're not working to improve, you're working to, what's the opposite of improve? Decline? I was going to say unimprove. I wish there was like a cognate word there that sounded the same, but you get the point of me. If you're not working to improve, you're declining. You're either going one of two ways. There's no such thing as staying static, right? And with the human body, it's impossible. You can't outrun it, right? With human life, you can't outrun it. Oh, I know what I was going to say. You could argue that biology, the human machine, is the greatest type of computer possible. You could argue that the end results, and this is like the sci-fi person in me, the end result of all our technological increases is biological computation. Look at the processing power of the human brain. Look at what we've been able to create as a society, as individuals. But the trade-off with that would be that it declines more rapidly. All right, I'm not saying we don't have decline and degradation in our mechanics now, in our mechanical objects now, in our manufactured objects now. But look at how long that would last versus how long the human body lasts. And it originally lasted right before the Industrial Revolution. So to me, that's interesting because what's really the line between man-made machines, man-made computers, and humans? Aren't those just computers? Anyway, so my grandmother gets that 2 weeks in quarantine, which sends her further down, you know, dementia, losing her mind, because she has no stimulation. She's just in a room by herself, literally. No physical stimulation either, right? Then the cancer comes back. Then, in the routine COVID tests, she and two staff members test positive. So they put her on quarantine again for 2 weeks. They put her on quarantine again for 2 weeks. What do you think that does to her mind? What do you think that does to her body? And that was recently, right? She tested positive around the time I was visiting California for Christmas. So she tested positive about, you know, a month, month and a half ago. You think that's not related? No, she did have the cancer in the foot and it was spreading into the rest of her body, right? There was no way to battle it back because, again, the degradation of the human body. But here's the thing. They put her on quarantine for 2 weeks. Never showed one symptom. Never showed one symptom. I said to my mom, you know, it's got to be a false positive. It's got to be a false positive. That is the most reasonable assessment in my mind. For someone that old, 91 years old, to test positive and not show one symptom, that's statistically unlikely in the other direction. If you're 11 and you test positive and show a symptom, that's statistically unlikely. If you're 91 and test positive and don't show a symptom, that's statistically unlikely. Then there's the confounding factor here. They said to my mom that sometimes people who test positive for COVID and never show symptoms and get out of quarantine show symptoms later. So here's the question for you. My grandmother has now died. What did they list her cause of death as? We've talked about this on this show, how people who didn't die of COVID, when they tested positive, were said because they had COVID, they were a COVID death. Because according to my mom, this place gets $66,000 for every COVID death. I don't understand this. Could somebody explain this to me? Why are places being paid for COVID deaths? Why are they being paid for it? A payment is supposed to be a trade for a value, right? What value are they presenting to receive the money? Or let's look at it another way. Let's look at it as restitution. Government pays people for suffering they go through. That's the theory, right? When we talk about things like welfare or disability or social security, things like that, right? It's supposed to be for suffering or to stop suffering. What extra suffering are these places going through because of COVID deaths? Is the system taxed that much? Is the system overburdened that much that they're losing money because of that? Is that the theory here? That this hospice is losing money because of the COVID death? Is that the theory here? $66,000? Because in my mind, what you're doing is you're incentivizing them to call people's cause of death COVID. And if you're in a hospice, if that is your business, and this is how far down the rabbit hole do you want to go of conspiracy, right? How much malicious intent do you want to give to people? And I don't even want to say it's malicious. This is, again, where I blame government intervention. Because how do you blame these people? How do you blame them? You're in the business of helping people who are dying die comfortably and die with some sort of dignity. That's what your business is in hospice. So you know when people are going to die. You're an expert in it. You've seen this enough. You know the patterns. So why would you not set up calling someone a COVID death? Why would you not make it look like they were a COVID death if you could get $66,000 for it? If you could get $6,000 for it. And I'm not saying that's the value of a human life. I'm not saying to go around killing people. I'm not saying you should be the serial killer who kills people by pretending they have COVID. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they know she was on the way out, right? She was 91 years old. Her mind was going. Cancer was creeping up all over her body, right? It was started in the foot and it was going everywhere. They knew she was going. So why not set up to call it COVID and get $66,000? In a way, it's sort of like, well, at least they got something good out of my grandmother dying, right? At least it helped them in some way. I mean, it's not like they're doing a bad business. It's not like they killed her, right? Now, if you can find the malfeasance, they killed her, right? Although then there's also questions about euthanasia, right? I don't want to get into that debate, but where's the line? Where's the line? My mom was talking about how they were giving her, I think it was starting yesterday, they were giving her doses of morphine under the tongue so she wouldn't suffer as much and breathing wouldn't be as difficult for her. But then my mom said, theoretically, if you give that morphine enough over a long enough period of time, the breathing will just stop. But that's not considered euthanasia. So where's the line? Where's the line? I don't want to get into the debate of whether euthanasia is moral or not. But the idea that you don't have control of your when to end your own life is kind of fucking weird to me. But where's the line there? So again, it's not like this place, this hospice, is doing a disservice, right? They gave my grandmother a place to die, right? A place to die in comfort to help my mom out. But it's an example of the way this whole COVID thing is being overblown. The way the system is set up to overblow this whole COVID thing. You're incentivizing these people to call as much as they can COVID. That's the value. That's the trade for trade. If you're giving them the value for value, that's the trade. If you're giving them $66,000, you're incentivizing them to call things COVID. That's what you're doing. And then the last sort of like, man, really driving home like the unseen tragedy of all of this, the unseen toll, right? That's what Dr. Drew talks about, right? The quality of life. On the Adam and Drew show, I've heard him say it all the time. Like, people get mad, like, how dare those old people travel for Thanksgiving? And Dr. Drew says to the people, you know, they got two or three Thanksgivings left, right? Do you want to give up one of them for possibly being able to have two of them with your family? Or do you want to do the one that's sure now and take the risk? He said that's up to them to make that risk assessment. Now, the problem is when you're in hospice and such, there's an entire community there of older people, right? But the rule is, the law is still, you are only, due to COVID, allowed one compassionate visit near the end of someone's life. So the last time my mom saw my grandmother was Wednesday, I believe, maybe Thursday. When yesterday, and again, I'm recording this on Super Bowl Sunday, so that will be Saturday to you all. When yesterday, Saturday, it was obvious my grandmother wasn't going to probably last the night. My mom couldn't go there and be there with her because she already had her one compassionate visit. And it's one person. It can only be one person. One person. It's not like everybody can have one compassionate visit. What about her sister who's still alive? What about my aunt, her sister who's still alive? So you have to make that judgment call. You have to make that judgment call that my mom has more of a right to see my grandmother than her sister who's been together with my grandmother longer than my mom. And I'm not saying, like, this would be of any family, right? You have two sisters, they're both elderly, they've known each other their whole lives, literally for one of them, right? I think my grandmother's the older one. So literally, the aunt has known the grandmother longer than anyone else. Her whole life, she's known her. And then she has to decide to let the daughter go. Or the daughter just has to say, no, I'm going. That's crazy that we're putting people in these positions. That's crazy. That's crazy. I'm going to do a non-elegant transition here, because speaking of how are people still doing things, how are people still living in California? I mentioned that earlier. And a conversation that came up at one point that one of the midsiders wanted me to touch on is, and this was related to the whole, oh my God, social media is censoring everyone. Oh my God, we have to regulate social media. Right, all that crap. And, you know, people were like, we have to defend Silicon Valley, blah, 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 blah. You know, that's where the center of the world is. Look, I replied and I said, no, Florida is where it's at. Florida is where it's at. And one of the midsiders wanted me to expand on that. So what am I talking about when I'm saying that? First of all, I think Silicon Valley and San Francisco and California are too far gone. I think the two foreground. I think California's fucked. I don't think there's any way to stop it from collapsing at this point. I don't. I think you're seeing the end of far left policies when you have overtaxation, when the cost of living is way too high. You talk about San Francisco in specific, cost of living is way too high. When you have shit on the streets, when you have homeless people everywhere, and then you look at the fucking weather. Why would you want to live in San Francisco? Why would you want to live up there? Now, with Southern California, I get it. I get why people would want to live there. It's a little too dry for me, but there are beautiful parts of it. Okay? There are beautiful parts of it. And don't get me wrong, you know, there's the bay in San Francisco, and there's the coast, right? Anytime you're near a coast with beaches, it's nice in that area. But just, you know, the temperature and the rain, it's the same thing. It's like Seattle, right? Seattle. You know, San Francisco is the second worst homeless population I've ever seen. Seattle has the worst, okay? If you want to see the worst homeless population I've ever seen, it's Seattle. Because why would you want to be a homeless in Seattle? Now, I have some friends up there who've talked about towns in the area, like incentivize homeless people to go there, right? The rules are set up. I don't think they're literally incentivizing them, but the rules are set up that it's incentivizing them in the same sense of paying places to call things COVID deaths. And then it's also, you know, why would you want to be homeless in Seattle? So you're angry about that because it's fucking cold and rainy and depressing in Seattle. And then, you know, most homeless people, this might be controversial to say, most homeless people are drug addicts or they have mental issues. And that's what's keeping them on the streets. You know, California, you know, they love to talk about, Newsom loves to talk about, well, it's a housing issue. We're just going to solve the housing crisis. As if some people don't want to be homeless, or if some people aren't homeless because of self-destructive issues, or some people aren't homeless because of, you know, mental issues, right? Mental problems they have. And maybe that's what makes them want to be homeless. And we can debate whether wanting to be homeless is a mental issue in itself. But I would also say, you know, if we're going to go down that route, maybe there's a you can distinguish between how people want to be homeless. To me, there's a difference. It's like, oh, I'm going to go camping all over the place, and then what we call urban camping, right? If you're living across the street from Angel Stadium in Anaheim and you're pulling a tarp over you, I don't think that's wanting to be homeless. But if you like to go from national park to national park, and you have a car and you don't technically live somewhere, maybe that could be wanting to be homeless, right? Are you, I mean, let's ask a question, a definitional question. Are you homeless if you drive an RV around the country and just pull into random places and park there? If you have an RV and you drive around in national parks, are you homeless? In today's day and age where you can work from home, why does anyone have to have a home in one place? If you can set up internet, right? If we can get internet fast enough over wireless networking, over cell phone towers, and over satellite connections, why can't people have roaming homes? Why can't we have that? So is that homeless? I don't know. But that's not what we're talking about, right? We're talking about most homeless people have mental issues or self-destructive habits such as, you know, extreme drug addiction. Maybe extreme drug addiction is redundant, but I say that because I think people are addicted to marijuana that don't say they are. I think people are addicted to alcohol that don't say they are or don't think they are. So I said it for that reason. And that's actually a perfect transition to something I learned recently about Florida, which kind of shows what I'm talking about. I was talking to this woman in the English department. She's, you know, an assistant coach for the girls wrestling team. And she was helping me go get a van. And she was telling me about, you know, some of her past and everything, you know, because she got married and bought a house recently. So, you know, just learning about her past. You know, she's from the Jacksonville area. She's over here in the Orlando area now. Just a lot of, you know, cool background information that teaches me about Florida, teaches me about sort of my future in Florida, right? And something she told me was she had an ex who, after they broke up, he got Baker-acted. That's what she said. She said he got Baker-acted. And, you know, I was taken back because I was like, Baker-acted? What is that? I'd never heard of Baker-acted before. I'd never heard of that before. So For a second, I was like, well, I'm ignorant. But then on the other hand, I was like, if I'm ignorant, there's a reason. Because I've heard of most important stuff. So then my mind immediately went to, this must be a Florida thing. And I said to her, is that a Florida thing? What is it? And she goes, oh, that's when, you know, if you're diagnosed with having mental issues, you can be hospitalized for 72 hours while people figure out what's going on and how to handle it and how to help you. And then, you know, sure enough, I looked it up and it's a Florida law. It's a Florida act. But just think about that act in itself, that one act. How much does that do to fix homelessness? Because if you're talking about a place to be homeless, isn't Florida it? I mean, we have about 1 week of winter a year, right? My car frosted over one day. Right now, again, it's not Southern California. If you're going to be homeless, Southern California is it too. Arizona, all those places, right? All these warm weather places. But, you know, Florida especially, right? There are tourists coming in who can, you know, give you money. And, you know, it's the same thing as Southern California. The tourists coming in will give you money. They don't see you all the time. But you don't see anywhere near the homelessness there is here. I mean, don't get me wrong. You see homeless people here. And usually I look at them and I go, oh, that person's addicted to meth. Straight up. You know what it looks like when someone's addicted to meth. But think about how a law like the Baker Act helps prevent homelessness. And more importantly, helps people help the people they care about. If you can deal with mental illnesses that way, and maybe it's just a mental episode that way, it keeps people off the streets. And that is just a microcosm of what I'm talking about with my love for Florida. Florida has two things. And I'll just sum it up as desirability and freedom. Desirability is the only two knocks I've ever heard anyone say against Florida is hurricanes and humidity. And honestly, for me, the humidity is much preferable to the dryness of the desert conditions of Vegas, of Southern California. Especially, I compare Vegas at night to Florida at night here, right? If it's 70 degrees in Vegas at night, it's cold because there's no sun. But the humidity in the air, if it's 70 degrees at night in Florida, it's still warm. It's still nice. It's still comfortable. Walking around Disney Springs at night is a lot nicer than walking around the strip at night. Or I will even put a time on it. In November, December, it's a lot nicer walking around Disney Springs at night than it is walking around the strip in Vegas at night. Walking around the beach here, if you're on the Gulf Coast. I haven't been in November, December on the Atlantic Coast yet, so I can't speak to that. But the Gulf Coast is much more enjoyable. Then you have such a diversity of culture here. And I don't mean like, oh, you know, we have African culture and we have Asian culture. And we have, no, I'm talking about you have big cities and country living, right? I can go to a wrestling tournament down near Miami. And it's a city, right? And it's a beach city. And there are towns from Miami there. There are teams from Miami there. Sorry, towns from Miami. That's stupid. Teams from Miami there. Then we can go to a cross-country meet. The regional meet being held in a small country town that doesn't care about mass at all. So there's a diversity of cultures there. It's easy to get around. And there's lots of places to see. There's the beach. There's theme parks. You want the Hollywood type thing? Go down to Miami. It's all here. Then we're talking infrastructure-wise. Who's building the high-speed train? Private industry is building the high-speed train that's going to go from Miami, Florida. I was going to say Florida, Miami, Florida. It's Florida. Right. Miami, Florida. It's going to go from Miami to Orlando to Tampa. And then Disney's helping fund it by bringing it from, on the way to Tampa, Disney Springs to Orlando. And when it's in Orlando, it's going to be the airport. And they're building an international terminal in Orlando. They're building an even bigger international terminal, so even more international flights can come into Orlando. Look, I don't consider myself a very smart man. I just know some stuff. I've been around. I've lived a bunch of places. But I like to look at what smart men did do. And if you look at Walt Disney, he diversified his parks in America. He said, I'm going to put one on one coast, one on the other coast. And, you know, on a business model, that's, you know, what it was harder to travel. You could get East Coast and West Coast in there. But also, he went to the two most desirable places to live in the country and made it so if one failed, the other could succeed. He made it so his risk was spread out over the two coasts. And now we have it. Now we have it where we look at, and this is the other part of it, the freedom. Florida is the place where the money was given back for the federal money was given back for the bullet train, and Florida said no. And now there's a high-speed train being built. California is the place where they tried to build the high-speed rail off of the taxpayers' backs, and all they have is the post up. They don't even have the train. Now, there's a train sort of coming in by the same company that's doing the high-speed rail here from Vegas to, like, Barstow, or it might even be closer than that. I don't remember the town name. So they'll be in the outskirts of California. It won't get to L.A. like those people think it will. But that's still Nevada doing that, right? Nevada doing that. Florida. Low cost of living. Florida, no state income tax. So when you take the desirability and the freedom, and you take away the people here, the government here, are not taking large steps to take away freedoms, talk about the bullet train and giving the money back. Talk about the way COVID was handled. Talk about, go look at, and I don't remember off the top of my head, talk about what DeSantis did in response to all the riots that happened. All the protests that happened. It wasn't as bad here, that's the first of all. But second of all, he set up rules that preemptively said, this is what the rule of law looks like in Florida. Not to punish people, not to take away their rights to protest, but to say this is how we protect our society here. And that's the thing. Besides the people who come here from, say, New York, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of, and this is probably the biggest problem facing Florida. And this speaks to, hey, why should people move here? The biggest problem is probably people moving from New York who don't hate New York. They move because they can't survive there and they still love New York. And they drive like they're from New York, and they act like they're from New York, but they live in Florida because they still wish they were New York. That's probably the biggest problem facing Florida culturally and politically. But that's why I said, no, Florida is the place. Come here. Come here. I know Tampa's growing. Downtown Tampa, what they're doing down there, all the hotels they're building, the guy who bought the Tampa Bay Lightning and really fixed that arena, how they're building everything up. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. I can't really think of much else to say. Can't really think of much else to say. I killed my transition, though, because I did things out of order. I did things in the original order, but I wanted to transition from Florida to Tom Brady and then have ending with that. But there's another thing I want to talk about because the Midsiders asked about it. So I'm going to talk about that first. And it's one of those things that, you know, Objectivist Twitter talked about. I hate people who are like, oh, Objectivist Twitter, Black Twitter, White Twitter, Snyder Twitter. Fuck off, it's Twitter, all right? You're just using it, and you're just only talking to those people. There's not, like, a sub-platforms for these things. They're just communities you developed, and then you guys get mad when other people come in and talk to you. Well, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. You don't understand what we're talking about in Snyder Twitter? Or somebody says something offensive about Snyder, and people are like, oh, my God, Snyder Twitter's coming after us, blah, blah, blah. It's the same thing with, like, Black Twitter. Like, oh, Black Twitter's saying these things again. Oh, look what's cool. But what? I don't understand these things. It makes no fucking sense to me. But anyway, this was cool and talked about an Objectivist Twitter. And I saw it outside of that. I mean, to be fair, this tweet has 5.7K retweets and 6.3K likes and 4.2K replies. I don't know if those are ratio. I don't know what a ratio is. A ratio is like when more people reply to you than retweet and like it. This is pretty close to a ratio then. So whatever. Again, I don't care about these things. They're so secondhand. Like, all of these definitions are secondhand. Anyway, this tweet is from UN Women. UN Women. Five things we must normalize for men. Here are the five things. Crying. Sharing the caring. Showing emotions. Seeking help. And sharing feelings. Now, this is from the UN Women account, okay? And I say that because I think that's the assumed premise under here. I think the assumed premise under all five of these is that men aren't women and men should be women. That's what I think this is. Men should be women. Because I think all of these are different for the genders. The two genders. The 58 genders. I don't know. How. Fuck you. This is so stupid. Here's how it's different. I think men can do all of these things. I personally do all of these things. But I don't do them in the way that women do them. That's not a knock against women. That's not saying anything negative about women. I'm just saying that it's different. I cry. But you know what happens when I cry? I'm done with it. I show emotions. You know what happens when I show emotions? I'm done with it. I seek help. You know what happens when I seek help? I'm done with it. I share my feelings. You know what happens when I share my feelings? I'm done with it. And that's part of, like, I also ask what the difference between 2, 3, and 5 is, right? Sharing the care, showing emotions, and sharing feelings. What's the difference? What is the difference between those three? What's the difference between crying and showing emotions? Why is crying the emotion we have to show? That's an even worse premise. That's not even a premise about the difference between men and women. That's a difference about the state of life. That's saying the state of life is suffering. The state of life is suffering. We have to normalize crying. Why can't we just say showing emotions? Couldn't this whole thing be showing emotions? Aren't all of these under showing emotions? If we're putting these in a hierarchy, isn't seeking help, sharing feelings, sharing the care, and crying all part of showing emotions? So you have to think about what they're emphasizing with each of these things. When they're emphasizing each of these crying, they want men to seem weak. That's what they want them to see. That's what they want to seem them. When a woman cries, you don't think she's weak. It's not that you think women cry all the time. Usually women deal with emotions differently than men. They feel them differently. So you don't think a woman is weak because she's crying. You just think that that's her disposition. That's her way of dealing with the world. But for a man to cry the way a woman cries would make him weak, because men aren't women. Men process emotions differently. Like I said, they're done with them. What does that mean, they're done with them? Men are much more focused on productive action. Men are much more focused on, okay, let's deal with this, let's move on. And there's value to both, right? There's value to thinking about feelings and how to cope with them and focusing on them on a longer term. There's a value in that. That's why we need both genders. We need both genders for that reason. Excuse me. We need both genders for that reason. But to emphasize men crying is you want them to show weakness. You don't want them to be men. And it doesn't say what kind of crying, right? Because I'm the kind of person that I'm very passionate. And when I feel something very strongly, positive or negative, I cry. I may have cried more over the past 20 years over positive things than I have for negative things. I mean, when I think, and this is very relevant today and very relevant to the last topic I'm going to get to, when I think to the Patriots Super Bowl championship, when I especially think to the one after Deflategate, I was a mess. Like, I want to cry about it right now. But then once that was over, it was just like, yeah, now let's figure out how we won and why we won and why we should appreciate it. Right. Actually, I see how this is really relevant to the whole Tom Brady conversation. So I'm going to hold on to that thought and bring that out in a second. Sharing the care. Again, this goes to the showing emotions thing. Like, what if sharing the care is like, I'm going to show you how to do this wrestling move? Or what if sharing the care is not saying, oh man, I'm sorry you lost, but hey, you know, let me show you how, you know, you were standing straight up in your stance and that's why the guy just shot on you, lowered his level and shot. Because you weren't in a defensive position. You weren't in a proper position. You were in a position that opened you up. Or, oh, hey, you didn't peel his hand off of your chin. That's why he was able to, you know, turn you in that way. You got to look away when he has the half Nelson on you. How is that not sharing the care? Don't I care if I don't want you to lose? What does it matter to me if you win or lose on the mat? So what does sharing the care even mean? I mean, this is what I mean, where it's coming from a female perspective, having to act like men. Sharing the care is like, oh, I care about you. Oh man, I just want you to know I feel for you. You matter to me. Like, it's like when people are like, you know, you matter to me, or you're important to me, or I value you, or that's the phrase is I appreciate you. What the fuck are you going to tell me you appreciate me? You do things to show me you appreciate me. Act like you appreciate me. I don't need to hear it. When someone says, I appreciate you, that makes me less likely to think they appreciate me. That makes me to think they want to say that to make me feel like I'm appreciated. I don't need to feel I'm appreciated. Don't be another teacher and tell me you appreciate me. Help me with the lesson planning. Make my life easier, and I'll make your life easier. And it's just showing emotions. Showing emotions. Again, what type of emotions? I'm going to tell you what emotion they don't want you to show. Anger. Anger, right? Anger, except if you're a Black Lives Matter protester, right? You get the point I'm making. When a man shows anger, what do they say? Oh, he's abusive, toxic masculinity, right? So it's what's acceptable. Seeking help. Seeking help. This is what I would say to you. What kind of a man doesn't seek help when he needs it? You think I don't ask a fucking question if I have it? You think I don't ask a question? You think I don't go to they have a reading coach at the school who helps everyone improve the standardized scores? Don't get me started on standardization and stuff. Yes, I teach public school. No, that does not mean I support public education. It just means someone's going to be out there on the front lines, people. No, I don't consider myself a frontline worker or want the vaccine. Thank you. You think I don't ask a question? Oh, how would you handle this? Oh, what do you think of this situation? Oh, well, I'm not sure how this worked out. What do you think? Someone with a true self-esteem seeks help. But again, they want to see men be weak, sharing feelings. Again, men share feelings. People who listen to this podcast, I share feelings. I don't share it in the same way a woman might. I don't share it in the way they might like it, but it's again, I'm done with it. I'm done with it, right? Oh man, that really pisses me off. I'm done with it. Part of this podcast is that, right? Something came up on Twitter today about, it was like, oh, what's one of the worst movies you've ever seen? I said, Booksmart. Look, I can't tell you the exact reasons I hated Booksmart. I remember thinking it was painfully unfunny. I remember thinking it was, ironically, women trying to act like men, right? It was like, oh, let's do super bad for boys. Women acting like men is repulsive to me. Repulsive to me. I want women to act like women because I love women. I want men to act like men because men are awesome and it's cool to hang out with them and have other people like that. Why would I want that from the opposite? Why would I want women to act like men or men to act like women? And that's part of why I didn't like Booker. But I can't remember every emotion I had with that or thought I had with that. But you know what? I didn't want to. I wanted to be done with it. So it wasn't in my head anymore. I got it out. I said, okay, those are my feelings. Those are my thoughts. Done. Move on. That's life. Don't know if I have much else to say about the tweet. I feel like that was a lot. But also, you know, right under it, I'm looking at it right now. There's a reply from Zuby, who I follow, who's pretty good. And he said, you know, his handle is at Zuby Music. Give him a follow if you haven't before. I think I talked about him last year on the show. He said, I feel like the person who wrote this has never met an actual man before and is relying on a caricature. That's the same thing as well, right? That's what collectivism does, right? That's what collectivism does. You put people in these groups and you assign group identities to them. And that can be helpful for marketing, right? No doubt it can be helpful for marketing. No doubt it can be helpful for marketing. When you're talking about demographics and things like that. But when you're talking about things like this, when you use terms like normalize, you're saying you want the aggregate to be a certain way. Well, let's talk about individuals and how individuals should handle it. Because it's a lot harder to aggregate, oh, how much do men cry? How much do men share the care? How much do they show emotions? Versus aggregate, how much do men buy certain things and how much do certain age groups buy certain things? Much different ways to look at human behavior. Also, I don't care about the lists and the thread, like the James Lindsay guy, Conceptual James, who replied, ignoring feminist advice, getting buff, get a solid job, find the Clinton G-spot, wife, kids, home ownership. That's just a stereotype, too. This is why I like Zuby, right? One side is a caricature, saying, Zuby's saying this is a caricature. And then, you know, James Lindsay, Conceptual James, is saying it from the other side. So, you know, I gave my thoughts. I think men are just more done with it when you're talking about emotions than women. And I just mean, I think they're more immediate with it. It's like they express it, they shrug it off, and they shirk it off. I don't want to say shrug it off. It's shirk it off, right? Just get it off. Like, sort of like dry yourself off. It's sort of like they jump in the pool, they jump in the ocean, they get out, they dry themselves off, and then they're done. They're in the sun again. I'm not using the sun as like a metaphor of like happiness or whatever. I'm just saying, I think that's the way men deal with emotions more than women. And I think women process them in a different way. I think they go deeper with them. I have a hard time even explaining the experience because I don't know what it's like. I can talk about something that I've had a lot of experience with, though, and a lot of emotions about, and it's something I talked about earlier. It's the whole Tom Brady question. Somebody asked, let me see what it says in Discord, what the exact thing is. It's Edjo, mid-center Edjo in Discord said, you could talk Tom Brady making another Super Bowl with a new team. I just noticed somebody in the chat said about 15 minutes ago, shows how much I've been paying attention to chat, sharing feelings except sexual desire interest, right? That would go under the showing emotions, right? You can show emotions. It can't be anger or sexual interest, right? Because if a guy shows that, right, he's being a all these fucking terms nowadays, like simp and alpha and player. I don't even know. But yeah, it's a great point. Sharing feelings except sexual desire interest, right? Yeah. So Ed Joe's comment. Talk about Tom Brady making another Super Bowl with a new team. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about there. We haven't done a Belichick Your Premises in a while. I will say it's crazy that Tom Brady moved to Florida at the same time I did. That wasn't planned at all, but it is interesting. And I mean, you know, the funny joke was that's what New England people do. They retire to Florida. He's an old man now. So it's true. And, you know, he's like an hour down the road. I could still stop recording this and drive to the game and be there in time. Not that I could get in, especially in the age of COVID, but I could be there in time, right? He's still that close to me. Right, which is crazy to me. I mean, honestly, it's about the same distance between Orlando and Tampa as it is my parents' house in Gillette Stadium, and they've had season tickets forever. So that tells you how close it is here. I always wondered why Orlando never had an NFL team. Well, Jacksonville's on one coast and Tampa's on the other. And there are a lot of Dolphin fans in Orlando, too. But the whole thing with Tom Brady is it was difficult. It was difficult for a long time. And honestly, I'm going to tell you, it was difficult right up until he made the Super Bowl. And I think it's for two reasons. One, I think it's because of Cam Newton. And what I mean by that is the Patriots still don't have a quarterback. And it's really, really tough to have had the greatest, possibly athlete of all time, definitely the greatest quarterback of all time, definitely the greatest football player of all time, on your team for 20 years. And then the next year you have Cam Newton. And look, I'm not like talking about Cam Newton as a person. I saw nothing from Cam Newton to make me think he's a bad person. I didn't see anything to make me think, oh man, that guy's a piece of shit. By all accounts, he said the right things, he acted in the right way, and he tried his hardest and he gave his all. I respect Cam Newton now more than I did before. There are people who've come through New England and I don't have as much respect for them. Cam Newton I respect more than I did before. But every player, there are key plays that show who they are and where their ceiling is. And in the beginning, Brady showed, you know, way back in the day, in the Tuck Rule game, in the drive against the Rams to win that first Super Bowl, who he was. Cam Newton had that in his first season, or his only Super Bowl appearance, sorry. The season where he lost one game before the Super Bowl with the Panthers, and the game was near the end, and he didn't jump on that fumble. That was it. That showed us who Cam Newton was. And ultimately, he has hit his ceiling. And his ceiling was pretty high. He was an MVP. They went to the Super Bowl. They had one loss that year. His ceiling was pretty high. He had that one good season. But he didn't have the mental durability to be able to survive in those moments where you need to survive. You know, the thing that Tom Brady has, right? The ability to survive in those moments, he doesn't have. Not just survive, thrive in those moments, right? He doesn't have them. And it's tough. It's tough to lose that. It's tough to lose that. And watch another team get it. It's tough to lose that and watch another team get it. And it's tough to not know what your future is going to be. I have no idea what the Patriots' future is going to be. I have no idea who our quarterback's going to be. I have no idea if we're going to be good again. I don't know. And that's a tough feeling to deal with. Especially when the dude who was on your team for 20 years goes to another team and you see him still winning. Now, there's an obvious metaphor here. I'm going to get to it in a moment when I talk about the Super Bowl and talk about what happened to me actually today. Had a couple cool stories. So it's tough to deal with. And there was another quarterback who had a similar experience to Cam Newton recently, or a similar event to Cam Newton, that I was relieved at, because I've thought this quarterback was overhyped, right? I mean, Lamar Jackson is overhyped, and we saw last season what happened with him. I've never been a believer in him since college. Well, it happened with another one, Josh Allen, right? When he threw the ball at the Chiefs player, that's when I knew. I had already had a sense that he was overrated, that he wasn't as good as people were saying. When he did that, that showed me his mental weakness. When you're losing that game like that, you have to keep your cool, and you have to not get rattled, and keep trying till the end, no matter what. And then you say, okay, next time, we'll get there again, and I'll know how it is, and this is a learning experience, and I'll improve and be better. But now, it's sort of like, I don't know if they'll ever be back. You know, right now, the AFC doesn't look too good. You know, the AFC East doesn't really have anyone. We don't have anyone. So maybe they will, but I don't believe it. Especially with Mahomes, right? With Mahomes in the AFC. I don't see how Allen has the mental strength to deal with that. I mean, look, there's a term they use in wrestling. It's breaking someone. And it's, you're one-on-one with someone, and if you push them hard enough and if you beat them up enough, you break them and they stop trying, or they don't believe they can beat you anymore. Josh Allen was broken. He was broken, and that's how he was acting, like he was broken. And the thing is, that's the thing. It is important that even when you lose, to never break. And that's the thing about Tom Brady, is he never broke. Even when he went 18-1 that year, he never broke. That's the difference. Cam Newton not jumping on the fumble, that's breaking. Not breaking is giving the same level of effort no matter the score, no matter the situation. That's not breaking. That's what it takes to win. That's what it takes to be clutch, is to not break. So the obvious metaphor here, right? The obvious metaphor here. Hold on. Before the obvious metaphor. So that was part of what was tough, was, you know, this is our quarterback, it's Cam Newton, it's not Tom Brady. The second thing that was tough was I was so concerned about the Patriots' legacy. All season I was like, if Belichick loses and Brady wins, doesn't that make the Patriots look worse and make it look like it was all Tom Brady? So it's not really the Patriots, it's Brady, which is going to make the Patriots' legacy worse. And part of that was exacerbated by the people who still to this day say it was all Brady and no Belichick. That's just anti-reality to me. That's just anti-reality to me. So I really wanted to prove them wrong. I really want, because I know deep down it's both. You know, the players on the field execute, but they have to be taught. They have to be put in the right position, the right positions. And Brady would not be where he is today if not for Belichick, and everyone knows that. But emotionally, they don't want to admit that. So I was really worried about legacy. I was really worried about legacy. But then Tom Brady kept winning. And then he was in the NFC Championship game. And I had said before the playoffs, I said, if Tampa Bay goes to Green Bay, they're going to beat him. How did I know that? Because Aaron Rodgers always, doesn't matter how good his team is. I don't think he breaks. Aaron Rodgers is weird. He always underperforms. He never executes. He can never get over that hump. He did it 1 year. That's it. And maybe that's because that was enough for him. Maybe once he won, he had lost that desire. Right? It's really hard to keep that desire to win as much as Tom Brady has. That's part of what makes him so special, right? He wants to keep winning, right? He wants seven. If he wins this year, is he going to want eight? He said he wanted seven. That's what his goal was. What if he still feels good and thinks he can get eight? He'll probably keep going. But maybe one was enough for Rodgers. Maybe subconsciously it was enough. You know, that's the ultimate question that's going to be facing Patrick Mahomes too. If he wins this one, is two enough? If they win three, is that enough? Is he going to want to keep going to six or seven or eight like Brady's going for? And if he loses this one, is he going to go, well, you know, I won one. It was a good run. I'm going to take my millions of dollars and be happy now. It's got to be tough to stay motivated on that level. So I was so worried about legacy all the way up. Even in that game, I was like, do I want Brady to win the AFC Championship game and then go to a Super Bowl without the Patriots? How bad would that make the Patriots look? But then I realized when he won that game and he went to the Super Bowl, and I was happy. You know, it's not the same. It is not the same. Unequivocally, cheering for Tom Brady on the Buccaneers is not the same as cheering for him on the Patriots. It's not. And I'm not going to pretend like it is. It's not. I don't have the same depth of emotion, depth of caring. I still appreciate it. It's still amazing. I'm like, this guy's fucking good. I think that's part of what changed my mind. It's just like, holy shit, this guy just wins. And to be one step removed from it, and knowing that he just wins, but he still just wins, it's just sort of like, fuck this guy. This fucking guy. Right? Tom fucking Brady. Like, are you fucking kidding me? So he won that game. And then I was able to take another step back. Like I just said, it was just like, this fucking guy. And I can just appreciate what he's doing and what he's done. And I just felt this enormous swell of gratitude. Here we go, UN women. I'm sharing feelings right now, UN women. I'm sharing feelings. I felt this enormous swell of gratitude that he was on my team for 20 years. That those 20 years changed my life and made me the person who I am today. And I say that in all seriousness. He is a patriot forever. We are all patriots forever. And him being in the Super Bowl doesn't take away from that. It adds to that. He could have been anywhere for 20 years and won. Now, would he have won as much? I don't think so. Would he be who he is without Belichick? I don't think so. But he still would have had a good career. Although, then again, he was a six-round pick. Let's not forget that. He was fourth string his first year in New England. Let's not forget that. So I want to take that back. He could go anywhere. But he could have been on any team. We could have not drafted him. We passed him over five times. So who's to say he would have been anywhere else? But the point is, hypothetically, he could have been anywhere else. He could have been on any of the other 31 other franchises. But he was with us. We got that. That makes it more special, not less. And if he wins again, that makes it more special because we got 6 of the 7 times. Do I wish 100% of the times were with us? Yeah, I do wish 100% of the times were with us. But look, this is where the obvious metaphor comes in, but where it fails. You could say it's sort of like watching your ex go be with someone else and you know your ex is fucking somebody else. But it's not the same. Because he's not the same person. And maybe there is similarities here. I don't know. I've never been through a divorce, right? Maybe people do change over time to that point. But he's not the same player, right? We got the best of Tom Brady. The Buccaneers are getting Tom Brady, but they're not getting prime Tom Brady. Only we got to experience that. And that's incredible. And that's amazing. And it's not like... And this is kind of where the metaphor breaks down even more to me. Like, by your ex breaking up with you and going and having sex with that other person, they can never have sex with you again, right? I mean, they could if they wanted to, but I'm going off of the conventional monogamy idea, right? We'll use this metaphor monogamistically, if that's a word. Monogamistically? I don't know. Eggnogonistically? Monoga eggnog? Somebody market that. Monoga eggnog. You know that they still got plenty of years of fucking left. And that's not going to be with you. With Brady, it's sort of like we saw what our salary cap was going to be. We saw what it is without him. He's only got a couple of years left of playing. It's not like we're losing out on what could be. And what happened already happened. It can't be taken away. So it's not like losing your ex. It's sort of like, and I saw somebody make this meme way back in the day, and it made me cry. I mean, because it's, you know, again, you and women, it made me cry. Oh no, it made me cry, you and women. It made me cry, mainly because the scene makes me cry every time I see the fucking movie, but also, you know, so appropriate. The scene at the end of Toy Story 3, where Andy gives the toys to that girl, I can't remember her name. Gives the toys to her. And he's like, you know, they gave me a lot. It's here. He's yours now. Jeez, I'm going to fucking cry thinking about this shit. Holy shit. Bonnie. Andy gives the toys to Bonnie, right? And somebody put Tom Brady's head on Woody when he's handing it over. I wanted to feel that in the beginning. And that meme hit me hard. It's hitting me hard now because that was what I felt in the beginning. But all these concerns with legacy and, you know, how it seemed to other people, what other people thought if it was Brady or Belichick. Like, you know, is it Brady or Belichick? Yeah, what about all the other fucking players on the team? What about Teddy fucking Bruschi, Ty Law, Richard Seymour, Willie McGinnis, Hightower, Troy Brown? What about all these other players? Edelman. Right, we're going to say that Gronk isn't even the same Gronk as last year, right? As when he was with us. Again, they're not getting prime Gronk. Anyway, I wanted to feel that. But other, you know, being concerned about what other people were saying made me not commit to that fully. But then being able to accept how stupid they're being and not caring anymore by Tom Brady continually to win and it not affecting, honestly, was it not affecting my perception of reality? Just being like, yeah, the Patriots are still the Patriots. Like, that didn't change anything. We still have the 6 titles. They're still awesome. Those years exist. This is just another awesome chapter that makes me appreciate him more. And now I can experience that emotion. And I think that emotion is best experienced or best expressed through the way I want to sum up this episode. Earlier today, I went to Walmart and I threw on my authentic Brady jersey, right? My like $300 jersey that I wore for over a decade. First time I've worn it all season. The prior time I had worn it was when we lost to the Tennessee Titans in Brady's last game as a Patriot. His last throw ever as a Patriot was a pick 6. Can live with dignity, you can't die with it, right, Dr. House? I finally was like, you know what? I can throw this on today. We're not playing, and I can support my boy Tom Brady. And I went to Walmart because I had stuff to get. First thing in was when I was in line checking out, this guy in the Yankees hat starts talking to me, and he's like, nice jersey. I was like, yeah, thank you. He goes, did you get it here? I was like, nah, man, this is something you can only get, like, at the stadium. I was like, I got this at Gillette years ago. He's like, yeah, the stitching's really good. That looks amazing. And then at the end, I told him, enjoy the game. And he goes, yeah, go Tom Brady. And he was serious. A guy in a Yankees hat told me, go Tom Brady. Like, do you realize how that doesn't fucking compute in my head? And maybe this is what the world needed. Maybe the world needed Tom Brady to go to Tampa Bay so everybody could appreciate him more. So it wasn't like, oh, fuck New England, right? It's sort of washed off some of that, like, hatred of the good a little bit. I mean, if a New Yorker in a Yankees hat, or just a guy in a Yankees hat can say, you know, go Tom Brady, like, you know, maybe he's a bandwagon. Maybe he's a bandwagon. I mean, I did see a lot of Chiefs stuff out there today. New Chiefs jerseys, like fucking bandwagoners. Maybe he's a bandwagon. I don't know. But still, it's just like, 2 years ago, a year ago, we wouldn't have had that experience. Yankees fans hated Tom Brady. They hated the Patriots. And then the other one, that was on my way out of Walmart, right? The other one, and this is what I want to end the episode on. The other one was this guy going into Walmart also blew my mind. It also blew my mind. He sees me and he comes out. He's driving on his car. He's this older gentleman, you know, one of those electric carts Walmart has. And he sees my jersey and he looks at me and he goes, thanks for Tom Brady. And he was so happy and he was thanking me for him. It's like, I'm like crying right now. It's like he still saw Brady as a Patriot and he was just so appreciative to have him for this short period of time. And it made me happy to see the joy in his face and hear the joy in his voice. That somebody else got to experience Tom Brady like that. And it almost, like, I already wanted Brady to win, but it's like now I don't want Tampa to have that 18-1 disappointment. I don't want them to have that like we had. It's okay for us because we had the long season. We had the 20 years, I mean. We had all the seasons. So it's all part of our story. But that guy, I wanted him to see. I wanted him to experience the high. I didn't want him to have the low. And you could tell. You could tell he's never had that 18-1. You could tell he didn't get it fully yet. Because I said to him, I said, good luck. And he laughed and he said, good luck. Is that what you said when you had Brady? To which this shows you how much Brady has shaped me by my reply. I said, well, I thought to myself we were probably going to win, but don't ever say it out loud. And then, of course, who walks out is two Chiefs fans walk out as we're saying this and they're staring at us. It must have been the weirdest fucking thing. Like, it was happening. It was so surreal. Like, I have these moments sometimes where I'm, like, removed from what's going on. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, here's this guy in a Buccaneer shirt talking to a guy in an authentic Brady Patriots jersey, and they're talking about how much they love Tom Brady and how amazing it is, and you walk out of the store and you have Patrick Mahomes jerseys on, and they're talking about winning and how awesome Brady is. Like, what that must have looked like to them, right? And I'm sure it made them want to beat Tampa Bay more, and we'll see what happens. I mean, Mahomes is great too. And, you know, this, you know, the storyline of like, oh, if he beats the goat, is he the baby goat and he's going to continue on? Like I said, we don't know how you can keep that desire up. We'll see what happens over the long run. There's a lot that can happen, right? Someone can get hurt. He can lose motivation. Teams can be managed weirdly. Coaches can leave. There's a lot that can happen. But the point is, that's a great storyline. And if you're a Chiefs fan, you have a lot to be excited about. And I'm happy for you. But what that guy said, thanking me for Tom Brady, that sums it up. And I have another chapter in my Tom Brady experience. And that will always sum up Tom Brady and Tampa Bay to me. I said, after 28-3, that everything felt like an epilogue, that everything felt like a curtain call after that. We won another Super Bowl after that, right? We went to two more. We won another one. Now he's in Tampa Bay. I feel like that guy thanking us for Tom Brady, thanking me for Tom Brady. Like, that feels like it to me. Right now in this moment, UN women, that feels like the Tom Brady story for me. I want him to win seven, and I want him to retire in the post-game ceremony tonight. Because I feel like the story would be told then. I feel like that would be the Tom Brady story. But then again, I will end on this note. Brady said years ago that he's not going to stop playing until he's not good enough to be out there anymore. So, perhaps, Dr. House, the ending to the Tom Brady story is always going to be that he plays until he's not able to play anymore, and his career ends not in dignity as he played, but he retires in a lack of dignity, because perhaps that is the only way it can go. We'll see. Hope he wins tonight, and those of you listening to this will probably know the results. You know what? I'm going to release this as soon as I edit it. So this won't be a Midside Monday. It'll be Midside Sunday, but I want you guys to hear some of this before the Super Bowl. Some of you to hear some of this before the Super Bowl. So as always, thank you for listening. It's always crazy to me that there's been nine seasons. We're starting the ninth season, 9 years of this, and people still want to hear what I have to say as if I'm someone important, as if I have interesting things to say. That's crazy to me. But hey, I appreciate it. And if you want to show some appreciation, you can do so in a monetary sense at patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon. Or you can do so, you know, at themidside.com/locals. Locals is per month. It's a subscription per month. Patreon is per piece of content. So every time we release an episode, I'm going to tell you, we will have a special episode next month on March 18th. Or after March 18th, sorry, not on. After March 18th, about Zack Snyder's Justice League, that's going to be released on March 18th. So that will be special. That will be Patreon only. So you're going to have to subscribe for that. I'll talk about it a little bit on the main show, but I want to save that content for Patreon there. So that will be Patreon. But we appreciate that. If you want to do that, you know, per episode, patreon.com/themidside, midside.com/patreon, or per month, you can do themidside.com/locals. Affirmations are always great. Appreciate that. You want to check out my book? It's based on a true story called The Cut, about the making of the movie Alliance. You can do so. It's themidside.com/The Cut, or, you know, you can find it on Amazon if you just put in my name and put in The Cut. The most important thing you can do is tell a friend. Tell them how much you enjoyed this episode, how excited you are for season 9, and we'll keep this train rolling because you help us keep the lights on. You help us keep excited. Oh, forgot to mention at the top, thank you to our Liberty.me listeners. I love you, libertarians, true libertarians. There's a lot going on right now, but you know what? Anyone who's a fan of freedom and individuality, you're on my team, and I appreciate that. Thank you. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce. William, I think you wanted to listen in just so you can see what happens when there's no drops and how unofficial it sounds.